a lot of the growth in our current system comes from lending, obviously. So when the banks lend money more easily, it means businesses are able to invest in operations, hire more employees, or in the case of myself and my colleagues, real estate investors can lever up, buy more real estate at more attractive terms.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another Finance Friday episode. I'm your host, Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. What is going on, everybody? You know the drill. Every Friday, we're coming at you with all things personal finance, because it's not what you make, but what you keep. And I'm here to share tips, tricks, and strategies to get your money not only working harder for you, but smarter, because it's all about creating that world of your dreams so we can all make the world a better place. And to do that, we need to get our money working for us. And if you tuned into last week's Finance Friday episode, I talked about the saying that I've heard a few times that goes around, that if you don't understand the bond market, you don't understand the real estate market. Well, I had recorded that several days before that Friday launch. And if you remember what happened on Friday, I swear I didn't know this was coming, but what happened with the Silicon Valley Bank and how it imploded, which has to do with the bond market, right? Because some of their underlying holdings and investments were bonds, right? Treasuries, mortgage-backed securities. But before I get into that, I think I should just do a background of what happened, how we got there, and where maybe we're headed. Obviously, I don't have a crystal ball. But yeah, let's just jump into it today. I don't want to take up any more time. So why was there a meltdown of these bank stocks, and specifically the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank? It all started with rumors of, I'm just going to call it Silicon Valley Bank now, SVB for short, from here on out. So they were facing a sudden shortage of capital, and a graph was floating around the internet, social media, specifically if you were on Twitter, it was floating all around over there showing the large extent of unrealized losses in bonds sitting on the books classified as held to maturity at U.S. banks. And at the end of, and this was at the end of 2022, this would be one of the factors that would lead, you know, to a lot of uncertainty and lead to depositors making a run at SVB and other banks to get their money out. But what does this actually mean? Banks enjoy a very favorable accounting regime, at least they have. Post the great financial crisis, or the GFC, commercial banks were asked to keep a liquidity coverage ratio, or LCR, above 10%, excuse me, above 100%. This means they must always have enough high quality liquid assets, or HQLA, to meet deposit outflows in a stress scenario, kind of like what we're in today. This effectively means that banks around the world are forced to keep around 10 to 15% of the asset side of their balance sheet in high quality liquid assets. And guess what qualifies as a high quality liquid asset? Reserves at the Fed. You guessed it. Also bonds. And essentially, you know, banks were asked to own a large amount of liquid assets and were told bonds were the only game in town due to regulation. So what bonds, right? Mostly government bonds. So what we've talked about, T-bills and the likes, and agency bonds. But you should also know they also, corporate bonds and mortgage-backed securities, so MBS, could qualify. So when regulators force you to own one of its bonds, they also force you to swallow a lot of profit and loss volatility. And banks don't like that, as I'm assuming you could get. Yes, they don't like volatility. They like as close to a sure thing as possible, right? Because of that, regulators have allowed bank treasuries to park bonds in two accounting-friendly books, available for sale, or AFS, and held to maturity, or HTM. In both cases, if bonds lose value, the bank P&L does not record the loss immediately. The unrealized gains and losses of securities held in AFS hits the capital portion of the bank, not its profit and loss. But here is where it gets really good for these banks. The bonds that are held to maturity, or the HTM book, are reported at an amortized cost. Or in other words, the unrealized loss essentially do not show up on the bank's financial statement. Let me repeat that again. Or in other words, the unrealized losses essentially do not show up on the bank's financial statements. Now, this obviously creates an incentive to them to park whenever they can, right? Essentially, you earn coupons over time and don't face P&L volatility. It was a perfect scenario. Banks can only sell a small portion of the HTM bonds when they sell them at a loss before being labeled kind of with a, with this, that segment of, you know, non-compliant with the regulators. large extent of HTM hidden losses was worrying to some, right? So that's what was kind of that chart that was floating, that graph that was floating around, was these unrealized losses, especially with the rates continuing to go up and thereby furthering to devalue bonds outstanding. Because as we all know, when rates go up, the underlying value of the bond goes down, because essentially in layman's terms, just think about it, right? I have this bond that pays me 1.5%, but today I can buy that same bond with the same risk level now for 4 or 5%, right? So why would I go, if you wanted to go sell your bond that's yielding 1.5%, if I was to buy it at cents on the dollar, right? So that value is going down. But there's also another concern at play here, and that is the liquidity and funding are becoming tougher for small banks, right? QT or quantitative tightening is reducing the balance sheet of the Fed, right? On the asset side, you know, QT shrinks the amount of bonds the Fed owns. On the liability side, it would be the reserves. So they're reducing them. Bank reserves are money for banks, right? They use it to settle transactions with each other, including the repo market. Picture reserves as, you know, like the lubricant of the financial system. They're essentially drying up the system slowly currently. Thing is, the reserves are not going down in an equal proportion for large banks and small banks. Small banks are seeing reserves shrink much faster. They're becoming less liquid. On top of that, U.S. households can earn, we've been talking about this, 5%+ risk-free interest rate with T-bills, right? And so they would rather do that than deposit their money at a bank. And there's a great argument that this is probably hurting smaller banks than those larger banks. I'm sure over the last week, you've been hearing the term fractional reserve banking. So let's get into this, what it is, and how that kind of that policy has changed over time. So before March 26, 2020, the U.S. financial system was based on fractional reserve banking. Fractional reserve banking is a system that allows banks to only keep a certain portion client deposits. The rest can be used to make loans or investments, but they have to keep a portion in cash or cash equivalents. Now, we've already talked what those can be. A lot of the growth in our current system comes from lending, obviously, right? So when the banks lend money more easily, it means businesses are able to invest in operations, hire more employees, or in the case of myself and my colleagues, are, you know, real estate investors can lever up, buy more real estate at more attractive terms. However, on March 15th, 2020, the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve announced a change to reserve requirements. On March 26, 2020, the U.S. banking system would be changed to no reserve banking. Simply put, banks could start lending and investing all their client deposits. You heard that right. They could start investing all their client deposits. Demand for loans dropped during the beginning of the pandemic, and over the last 6 to 8 months with rates going up, demand and appetite for lending, like, declined. Clearly, the banks need another way to make money, right? So they started buying assets. At some point, the growth we've seen in this economy, people are making more and more deposits and the bank has to go out and put that money to work. And so a lot of what they're buying is bonds, and the bonds we discussed earlier, right? Treasuries, some even corporates, mortgage-backed securities. And also, as I mentioned earlier, these can be volatile, right? Because especially if they have longer maturities and as interest rates go up, devalues their current holdings. So it's not good in a rising interest rate environment. And so all while the amount of outstanding deposits remain fixed. So think about it. We put 10 bucks in, that's 10 bucks, right? But then they go invest it, $10 into a bond. But now that bond that was $10 is now, let's say, worth $7, right? So if I want to get my $10, I wouldn't be able to get it out anymore, right? So essentially meaning, you know, all while the outstanding deposits remain fixed, they can't meet all withdrawal requests if needed. And this is known as a bank run. You've seen that The Simpsons clip of Bart running into the bank and muffling his mouth and saying, essentially, like, they can't get your money out. And then everyone just freaks out and tries to get their money out. And then it causes a bank run and the bank doesn't have, you know, he essentially runs up and says, they don't have enough money to cover all your deposits. And then just starts a bank run because then people try to ask for all their money. And that's essentially what happens when a large number of clients start withdrawing their deposits. The bank doesn't hold enough deposits to satisfy these withdrawals. So client deposits at U.S. banks are insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, or FDIC. I'm sure we've all heard this. And the FDIC covers up to 250,000 deposits. So if you had a deposit in the bank of that or less, they would cover it. And so now let's get to Silicon Valley Bank, or SVB. It's a commercial bank out of California doing banking for much of tech and startup world, not just in that area, but throughout the entire country. It was one of the largest banks in the U.S. based on deposits. From 2019 to 2021, SVP's deposits tripled, and they bought assets using most of these deposits. They had one of the largest chunks of their total deposits and investments out of any bank in the U.S. Now, a lot of these were in bonds, such as treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. They actually had over $80 billion, with 97% of these with 10-plus year duration, with an average yield of 1.56% yield. So, and that's in mortgage-backed securities. You know, so this led to SVP having two times the sensitivity to rates than most banks, right? Because they had that longer duration, and that's called duration risk, right? Because you're holding that longer, and so that's more of a chance for rates to change over time and increase and then devalue the bond, which is exactly what happened. So then over the last year, as we have seen rates rise at the fastest pace in decades, leading to the eroding, like I just said, of the bond values, meaning if SVP was faced with a bank run, they wouldn't be able to meet those withdrawals. And so majority of the clients, like I said, were VCs and startups. With higher interest rates, VC investments declined over the past 12 months. And with less funding meant startups had less cash to spend. Their cash burn was actually two times higher than pre-2021 and has not adjusted for that slowing funding. So they were in need of cash. And what happened is this started getting out, right? SVP actually had to sell about $21 billion in assets to meet some withdrawals that were just coming naturally from some of these startups burning cash at a faster rate and not getting new funding. So they had to pull cash out. And people started hearing about this. And then Twitter sphere, the Twitter world took over and people were tweeting this out, and prominent investors and VCs were telling their clients to pull money out. And this just resulted to a domino effect. And on March 10th, $42 billion of deposits left the bank and led to a bank collapse. And another issue is that not all companies at first got their money out, right? And like company Roku, which I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with, they held 20% of its cash at SVB. So the question is, would they be able to service their short-term liabilities like payroll if they weren't able to access that cash? And this had a ripple effect of like, okay, if that happened, then what else could this lead to? And this was the concern that the market had. And that's why we saw a huge drop. And then over that weekend, we also saw Signature Bank, which is one of the largest, you know, holders of, like, I believe it was multifamily in New York City. And then we saw Credit Suisse recently, their largest backer, which was the Saudi bank, said that they would not be extending the line of credit or backing them just due to some regulation issues with they already owned 10% and they didn't want to own more at this time. And so this is what caused the market to do crazy things. And obviously, since then, there's been some time that the Fed has backed all depositors of both SVP and Signature. And then Credit Suisse was backed by the Swiss National Bank. So this has kind of squashed some of the volatility, right? And now First Republic Bank just came out and they were in dire straits. However, they've been backed by some of the major banks, including JP Morgan, Bank of America, Wells Fargo. There might have been one more. They each put in $5 billion to kind of shore them up for the time being. And I'm assuming, you know, one of those banks, if not another, will probably acquire First Trust. So we're just in interesting times, right? And what does that mean? You know, that's the billion dollar question, right? Where are we going to lead to? Like pre-last Friday, before any of this happened, the question wasn't, is there going to be another rate hike? It was, is it going to be 25 basis points or 50 basis points? A lot of people pre all of this were saying it's going to be 50 basis points, right? Well, what's happened since then is obviously it's happened in the banking world, a lot of uncertainty, but also latest CPI numbers came out, which still above the 2% threshold, right? They're at 6%, but it has month over month, it has slowed down. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens next week with the Fed. There's a lot say that they might not do anything. I think we just need a little more time over this week to see if there's any more fallout from the other banks. You know what happens with First Trust, Credit Suisse. They seem to be short and backed up at this time. But honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if they went ahead, maybe not with the 50 basis points, but at least 25 basis points. I would not be surprised, because I think to his point earlier, he wanted something until it broke. For a while, a lot of people thought, or at least over the past few days, people thought this was it, right? But it seems like the government stepped in. Whether you think that's right or wrong, that's a whole another topic. But it seems like at this moment, it's kind of, they've backed up these banks. They ensured all depositors will get their money back. And from here, we got to see if there's any more ripple effects. I personally think, well, there definitely could be more ripple effects, and time will tell on that. But I personally think the Fed will continue with their plan. But I think this is their new thing, that this is what they want to do. They want to keep raising rates to lower inflation, whether it's right or wrong. That's what they're doing. So It's going to be interesting to see, but it's just been a wild ride because rates fell off a cliff on Monday after all this happened. You know, there, you know, the 10-year was at around 4% and dropped for the week 3.4. Now it went back up to 3.7, I want to say, and now it's at around 3.5. So it's just a very interesting time. Very interesting time. I just wanted to get on here, and if anyone's worried about pulling their money out, the government backing up these banks, I think, should show you that they're not going to let depositors get hurt. Yes, they let the investors, the stakeholders, the managers, the executives get hurt. And as it should be to an extent, right? They were doing some risky stuff. They made some errors. That's on them, right? But shouldn't be at the depositors who had nothing to do with that. So I think that's a great thing. And it should give people confidence in that going forward. Time will tell. First Trust had a lot of MBS, a lot of mortgage-backed securities. So did Signature Bank. At this time, it has not an effect on real estate in that sense, but time will tell. All right, but I just want to get on here. Obviously, a lot going on about this topic. I was hoping I could shed a little light, maybe make it a little easier to understand. Obviously, I'll be the first to admit I don't know everything. Far from it, but just the research I've done and what I do know, I just wanted to come on and share that. So every Friday, this episode is usually about like sharing tips, tricks, strategies. But I think it's sometimes important to know what's going on, right? Know the background, know where we could or could not be going. That's important to know that before you develop any strategy. So I felt it was important to come on and share this. But yeah, as always, I just want to thank everyone for tuning in. I get the messages on Instagram, on LinkedIn, that you like the show. That just means a lot. It means when I'm pouring into this, that I'm actually giving some value to others. And I think that's the most important thing in the world, is give value to others when you can. And so, yeah, as always, if you are finding value from this, I'd love to provide value, not just to you, but to others too. So if you could share it with others that you think could get value, that would also mean the world. And if you haven't done so, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you watch this on YouTube, smash that like button, hit subscribe. And as always, easy doesn't pay well. And instant gratification is self-destructive. So not only get out there and work hard for your money, but have your money work hard for you, so we can create the life of our dreams. We can all make this world a better place. All right, buddy, I'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is an investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and, of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.